traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Welcome to the PAS Report Weekly Roundup Podcast. The PAS Report provides an honest analysis on the critical issues that matter to you without the biased media filters. Here's your host, Professor Nicholas Giordano.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the PAS Report Podcast. This is your host, Nick Giordano. And if you've been a loyal listener to this podcast, you would have heard my constant, and I mean constant, condemnation of the government, of its policies, the politicians, the bureaucrats in charge of this monstrosity that it's become. But we can't kid ourselves. It's not entirely their fault. Sure, they carry a significant portion of the blame, but we can't absolve ourselves from our responsibilities. It's time for us to look in the mirror, accept our share of the blame. The truth is, most of us, we're ignorant when it comes to American history, our founding, the founding principles. We are oblivious to the fact that as a nation, we began under the Articles of Confederation. Subsequently, we created the United States Constitution. And this remains one of the most consequential documents throughout history. Shockingly, when you look around, the vast majority of the American people have never even read this Constitution. And this is not a partisan issue. We have to acknowledge our complicity and take responsibility for our collective ignorance. It's due to this ignorance that we've shifted away from the principles of limited government. It's the reason that we're seeing this rise of the administrative state. We were founded on the principles of limited government and individual liberty for a reason. We wanted a government that feared and respected its people, a government that played a minimal role in our lives, a government where power is divided between the federal and state governments. However, the administrative state that exists today is a far cry from that vision. If you look at the myriad of problems that we face today, we have to acknowledge that many of these problems exist because of us, because we constantly look to the government to solve every single problem. We constantly empower the government more and more and more, even though they've shown themselves to be incompetent. They've shown themselves to be corrupt. They've shown that when they get more power, they abuse that power. This is what has led to the rise of the administrative state. All too often, we want to think that government can fix everything, but they can't. And you have to ask yourself, as our government has expanded dramatically over the last 90 years, as it has constantly been empowered more and more, what's the result? Think to yourself, what problems have they solved? What is better today than compared to 20, 30 years ago? Has the administrative state made your life easier or harder? Has it been beneficial or detrimental to our country, to our people? And that's what I want to explore this episode. Now, before I get into it, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Go to the PAS Report website, PASReport.com, sign up for the newsletter, and share this episode with your family and friends. Now, the reason I decided to do this episode is because over the weekend, I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal, and I have the links to the poll that I'm talking about on the website, so check it out in the show notes. But the article focused on how most Americans doubt that their children will be better off than they were. According to this poll, 78% of the American people responded that, quote, they don't feel confident that life for our children's generation will be better than it has been for us, end quote. That's the highest percentage we've seen since they began asking this poll in 1990. Only 3 in 10 Americans agreed that people like them and their family have a good chance of improving their standard of living. 80% believed that the economy was not so good or poor. Now, I recognize when you do look at history of this poll, You start to see the numbers do ebb and flow along with the economic conditions. So if the economic conditions improve, will Americans be less pessimistic? Will the numbers of those feeling confident that their children's generation will be better off than our generation, will that change? The idea that each successive generation in America would be better off than a previous one, this is referred to generational progress. This idea has been a core part of the American dream. It's the belief that anyone, regardless of their social status, regardless of their background, anyone can achieve success and prosperity as long as they work hard, as long as they have the determination, the grit. And this belief in generational progress is rooted in the fact that historically, the United States, we achieved it. We've experienced significant economic growth, increased standard of livings over the time. Each new generation was able to achieve greater economic stability and prosperity for their family. The idea that each new generation in America can achieve greater success and prosperity than the previous one, it remains such an important and aspirational part of the American dream. This idea of social mobility and success, they're the driving force behind our nation's success. You go anywhere else in the world and social mobility is extraordinarily difficult. It's not easy. Here it was. So why are we so pessimistic now? Why does something feel different this time around? Why do you see this sense of hopelessness that's plaguing our society? And it's not that hard to understand why Americans feel the way they do. Just look around. You could look at the macro level. You could look at the micro level. Everything seems to be falling apart at the same time. It's like this perfect storm. We see the instability in the international arena. You have China declaring themselves as a global leader of a new world order. Remember how this administration says that they were going to go isolate Russia. Doesn't it feel like we are more isolated than ever? I mean, you see allies like Saudi Arabia, they're moving away from us, going into closer to China's sphere of influence. We see China making massive inroads right in our own backyard. Just look at South America. You have this great global power structure that's beginning to change, and this administration's dithering. I mean, what did John Kirby say was the cornerstone of the Biden administration's foreign policy last week? Was it to push back against China? Was it to try and isolate China? Was it to try and push back against the cartels, stop the flow of fentanyl into the United States that's killing our children? Stop the flow of human trafficking that's going on in the United States? To increase America's power and influence? Is that the Biden administration? Is that the cornerstone of their foreign policy? No. They announced that the cornerstone of their foreign policy is going to be the LGBTQ plus agenda. That's going to be the cornerstone of their foreign policy. So now we have a woke foreign policy where trying to push this foreign policy on other countries, including allies, where the culture of those countries are going to reject the woke agenda. They're not going to go for it. So why are we pushing this? What is it? How does it benefit us? I would like to know. This should not be the cornerstone of any foreign policy. It really is stunning when you think about it. And you look, and today I'm reading an article how all these foreign countries are actually moving away from the dollar. They're stopping the use of the dollar as the currency in trade. This is a disaster. And yet this administration, they're dithering. They want to placate the far left of their party base while the world is in shambles. And at the same time, we have our own domestic challenges on multiple fronts, right? Our economy is in shambles. Americans struggling to pay their bills. They got high inflation, high energy costs. The border is a disaster. Our education system has collapsed. We have a worsening mental health crisis thanks to the little Mussolini wannabes. For the second year in a row, we've witnessed life expectancy drop in the United States. Teen overdose deaths are tripling. In 3 years, they tripled. Now, these deaths aren't from your ordinary substance abuse issues. These are people that many of them made one stupid mistake that shouldn't have cost them their lives, but that's what it did. These deaths are from teens making a poor decision, smoking marijuana that's laced with fentanyl, taking a pill thinking it's something else when it's really fentanyl. They don't have addiction issues. It's a disaster. So I ask again, we continue to empower the government further and further. We've witnessed the rise of the administrative state. I want you to show me where things have improved. We talk about important concepts like liberty and capitalism, but do those principles even exist anymore? Do we really even know what they are? Do we really even appreciate it? Just look at how willing people were to give up their liberty during the pandemic without asking any questions whatsoever. And it turned out that all the little Mussolini wannabes were wrong. Look at how the government is involved in all aspects of our economy. You know, we constantly hear the left blaming the capitalist system, the capitalist society. If you think we have capitalism, you're smoking something. Because the idea that we have a capitalist country anymore is laughable. It's not capitalist. But before I get into that, I have to explain what the administrative state actually is, because you're probably wondering. He keeps on using this phrase, administrative state. What does administrative state mean? Now, understanding what the administrative state is, it's not rocket science. It's the growth of the bureaucracy. It's where you see this ever-expanding network of administrative agencies, regulations, bureaucratic procedures that end up controlling all aspects of life. It's where we see the blurring of the lines of corporate entities, the media, big tech, and government, where they almost become one. it's been developing over a long period of time. It's now deeply entrenched within the system. And while we began to see its growth in the late 1800s, early 1900s, we really saw it explode under President Roosevelt's administration, where you had a Congress that was all too willing to grant this increasing federal authority within the executive branch. Now, I get it. We were in the midst of the Great Depression. Then we were fighting World War II, so I understand it. But according to the Congressional Research Service, several dozen new federal entities were created under FDR's administration alone. Going forward, it continued to accelerate and expand under both Democrat and Republican administrations, with the exception of Eisenhower. Then you have the 9/11 attacks. That's where it like really hit warp speed. You had the 9/11 attacks, 2007, 2008, you have the mortgage meltdown crisis, and we continue to see this growing apparatus today. Again, going by the Congressional Research Service, estimates are that several dozen new federal entities were established since the 9/11 attacks. Now, did you notice what I said? The Congressional Research Service estimates, and even they haven't been able to pinpoint an exact number. How frightening is that? And another amazing fact, when you look at the CRS, Congressional Research Service, when you read the report, it states that it's worth noting that not all these new entities were departments or agencies. Some may be duplicative, others may be merged over time. But remember, we started with three cabinet-level departments. We now have 15 cabinet-level departments, hundreds of agencies and sub-agencies. We have regulatory commissions, independent agencies, government corporations. And if you try and find the exact amount of government departments and agencies, you get all these different numbers depending on the source you go to. So if you go to the Federal Register, they're going to list that we have 440 federal government departments and agencies. If you go through FOIA, through the Department of Justice, they have it down as a little bit over 250. The U.S. Government Manual lists 316. The Unified Agenda of Federal Regulatory and Deregulatory Actions lists 66. What's up with that? Then I did a manual search on the Office for Personnel Management's website, OPM, and the number came out to a whopping 531. I've been teaching American government for over 17 years, and I still cannot pinpoint an exact number. What I do know is that increased regulations only burden us and make our lives more difficult. You have Bernie Marcus, the co-founder of Home Depot. He said on numerous occasions that he would not have been able to start Home Depot today because of all the rules and regulations. You have people screaming about the wealth gap. And what they don't realize is that the administrative state makes it nearly impossible for ordinary Americans to start small businesses, to grow, to thrive. Part of the reason you're witnessing this pessimism that our children's generation won't be better off than we were is due to the fact that people aren't able to take as much risk today. So many people go into government work. They become government employees. Then you have the corporate giants who only get larger and more powerful. You have the administrative state stifling innovation. You know, America rose to become one of the strongest superpowers the world has ever witnessed, largely due to our ability to innovate. However, you have all these increased regulations stifling innovation. It's harder than ever to bring new products to the market. Many businesses and innovators feel that it's not worth the time, money, or investment. You factor in an entire generation where so many people, particularly the young people, they would rather be social media influencers than astronauts, doctors, lawyers, teachers. How depressing is that? Then we wonder why there's this sense of hopelessness. Then we wonder, you know, we locked kids down. We socially isolated them. We kept them out of school for almost 2 years. Forced them to get vaccines. Increased screen time by a factor of, what, 10? And then we wonder why we see this disillusionment. Then we wonder why we see this mental health crisis. You just had that shooting by the trans person down in Nashville, Tennessee. Now, I'm not blaming the shooting on the lockdowns or what was done during COVID. Obviously, school shootings happened long before COVID. Obviously, this has been a problem that started in the 1990s. However, I anticipate things like this getting worse because when you look at what's going on, when you look at the younger generation and you ask them, what's their purpose in life? They don't have an answer. Now, this, again, just put it on the path. You look at the emerging technology, the large corporations, the administrative state continuing to grow, the regulations continuing. And it's not just the federal level. We also see it at the state level, the local level. They want to control all aspects of life, you know, banning plastic straws and making you drink from paper straws, which is absolutely disgusting. Paper straws just taste every single drink. It's just nasty. They banned grocery bags. But that's not enough, right? They have to control more. So now they're moving on to gas stoves, gas-powered vehicles. And this is what the administrative state does. It has a profound effect on the totality of our society. And the effects are actually mostly negative. We've seen the proliferation of bureaucratic agencies resulting in a significant expansion of the federal government's reach into our daily lives. This has led to a dramatic loss in individual liberty, increased regulation of private enterprise, both of which are antithetical to the founders' intent and principles of limited government. You have this lack of transparency and accountability. I don't think there's a single person that could argue with me on that point. We have seen institutions and bureaucrats fail, yet they continue to expand. I mean, you have the most incompetent officials running this government, running the state governments, running the local governments. But when you look at the federal level, it's a complete disaster. And I'll take it out of the coronavirus because, yeah, the coronavirus became really political. But just look at Afghanistan. Look at that debacle. We see our institutions becoming ideologically weaponized to target political opponents, pushing a political agenda. That's not going to work out well. I've spoken about that in previous episodes. I've detailed out some of the most egregious abuses of power by the bureaucracy within the last 20 years. And I encourage you to listen to those episodes. Bureaucrats are not elected officials. Therefore, they're not directly accountable to the people. That makes it difficult for us to hold them accountable for their actions. You look at the embodiment of science himself. You look at the Lord Fauci. And the Faucis of the world have inflicted enormous damage on our society. They've lied to us. They've manipulated us. They've divided us. The draconian policies that they created had a profound negative effect that's going to be with us for decades. And sadly, not a single one of these people have been held accountable. You have the administrative state undermining the constitutional separation of powers, consolidating too much authority in the executive branch. And this concentration of power in the hands of unelected bureaucrats and a president runs counter to the principles of limited government and individual freedom. It is a threat to both liberty and the constitutional republic. It's a threat to the principles of democracy. They claim they care about democracy. They don't care about democracy. They care about power. But it has an even bigger effect than that, and a much larger effect than that. And I want to pick up on this point when we get back from a short break. So hang tight, I'll be right back. As someone who worked in emergency management, I routinely sounded the alarm bells on our outdated grid system. Think back to 2003 when a tree branch hit a power line in Ohio, shutting down power to the entire eastern seaboard. Around 100 people died, and this was one of the costliest disasters in American history, with losses totaling over $60 billion. Even the White House sees it. They're saying two-thirds of the grid are at least 25 years old, and they recently announced billions of dollars to update it. But we're talking about the government here. How long do you think that's going to take, if at all? When an incident happens, you have to rely on yourself. Be prepared for yourself and your family. With the Patriot Power Generator, you get a solar generator that doesn't install into your house because it's portable. You can take it with you, even use it inside. But it's powerful enough for your phones, medical devices, and even your fridge. Right now, you can go to 4patriots.com, use code PAS to get 10% off your first purchase on anything in the store, including the Patriot Power Generator. You'll also get their famous guarantee for an entire year after your order, plus free shipping on orders over $97. A portion of every sale is donated to charities who support veterans and their families. Just go to 4patriots.com, use code PAS to get 10% off. That's 4patriots.com, use code PAS to get yours today.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Welcome back, everyone. Now, it's important when we examine the administrative state that we understand much of the administrative state, the attempt is to socially engineer society. That's what it comes down to. And they want to do it by implementing policies and regulations that are designed to shape our behaviors, our attitudes, and our beliefs. Of course, it's mostly far left policies that are being used to reshape our behaviors. They want to determine what we can and cannot purchase, where we can and cannot go. It's certainly an overreach of government authority, infringes on our rights, but they don't care about that. And piggybacking off of this, just look at the funding and the use of government grants. The government often provides funding to organizations and institutions because they want to promote certain values, certain behaviors. Look at climate change. Do you think the government will ever provide grant funding to someone who goes against the climate change narrative? So it shows you that it's all designed to shape these attitudes and beliefs, to push us in a certain direction, rather than allowing for us to go in the direction we want to go, rather than allowing for an open and free debate on the issues. President Eisenhower warned us of this. He warned about the use of government grants in his farewell address. You know, when people listen to Eisenhower's speech or refer to it, they constantly bring up the idea of the military-industrial complex. But too many gloss over the part where Eisenhower warned about the hijacking of our system, and it's usually hijacked by using federal funding. Take a listen.
Akin to and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industrial military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades. In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly. A steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government. Today, the solitary inventor, tinkering in his shop, has been overshadowed by task forces of scientists in laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the free university, historically the fountainhead of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research. Partly because of the huge costs involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. For every old blackboard, there are now hundreds of new electronic computers. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite. It is the task of statesmanship to mold, to balance, and to integrate these and other forces, new and old, within the principles of our democratic system, ever aiming toward the supreme goals of our free society.
Just look at the government messaging of today, and you tell me that they are not attempting to socially engineer society. Listen to the public messaging. Listen to the propaganda. Government agencies and officials, that they use these platforms to promote their own political agenda. Read the Twitter files. You have the government trying to push single narratives to promote their own agenda. Look at the CDC. Carol Crawford from the CDC trying to force Twitter to silence and censor any opinions that she, as part of the government, as she and the government deem unapproved opinions. You are not allowed to have your own opinions unless they are approved and rubber stamped by the administrative state. You have people saying that the United States got it wrong when it comes to the idea of freedom of speech. And we're talking about high-level officials, former officials from the Obama administration. We're talking about law professors. It's insane. Let's not kid ourselves. The scary part, the frightening aspect to all of this, is that the social engineering is working. The same Wall Street Journal poll I brought up before also looked into all-important American values. Values that once defined America. And the results of this poll is frightening. The percentage that say patriotism is very important to them went from 70% in 1998, 61% in 2019, just 38% today. Think about that. Now, here's the amazing part. Remember when they said you can't say nationalism, can't bring up nationalism. Nationalism's bad. It leads to xenophobia and ethnocentrism. So instead, use patriotism. And then what happened? Well, then they started to attack patriotism. They started to attack the idea of patriotism. And no one should be shocked by this. When you have government agencies link patriotism to domestic terrorism, this is the result. And this is exactly what's happened. You have the FBI, Homeland Security, all putting out memos that patriotic symbols, things like the American flag, that they are viewed as far-right extremists, where you have this constant bombardment from the loons that patriotism is akin to white supremacist ideology. And then we're going to wonder why patriotism sits at 38%. If you look at religion, the percentage that say religion is very important to them went from 62% in 1998, 48% in 2019, 39% in 2023. You know, what really amazes me, and you see the effects of the coronavirus here too, you have this constant move away from religion, the demonization of faith. Now, the amazing part is during crises, you usually see a return to faith. You usually see a return to religion. So you have this pandemic come in, but we didn't see it. And why didn't we see that? Well, because the administrative state hijacked the religious institutions. They were the ones that would determine when, where, and how you practice your faith. And so people stopped showing up. And most churches, most religious houses of worship still haven't recovered when it comes to attendance. So we lost our faith. What about having children? I mean, you know, the idea in life, one of the greatest joys in life is having children. That it's not all about you and your life. That you're responsible for other human beings. You're responsible for raising decent human beings. And I'll admit, parenting is the hardest job I ever had. But it's also the most rewarding job I ever had. Well, the percentage that say children, having children is very important to them went from 59% in 1998 to 43% in 2019 to just 30% in 2023. What about community involvement? The percentage that say community involvement is very important to them went from 47% in 1998. It actually increased to 62% in 2019. Now it's down to just 27% in 2023. Well, if you don't have patriotism, obviously you're not going to have community involvement. They have to work together if you want to have a functioning society. However, there is something that did increase, though. Money. The percentage that say money is very important to them went from 31% in 1998, 41% in 2019, 43% in 2023. So that actually increased slightly. Our priorities are completely backwards. And when looking at these numbers, it's important to note that there is a big gap in where one stands depending on the age they are. But no matter which way you slice it, how does a nation survive with numbers like these, with this type of feeling? It's not just the government that pushes toxic messaging. They do it in concert with their corporate partners in the media. And I find it amusing. You know, again, I'm going to bring it up. The far left, they criticize capitalism all the time. They make it as if capitalism is the cause of every ill within society. They blame capitalism for all the social ills. But the truth is that as our country has moved further and further away from a capitalist free market approach, things have gotten worse and the administrative state has gotten bigger. The idea that we have a truly capitalist free market economy is ridiculous. The truth is that the government has a very pervasive role in all aspects of our economy, continually selecting which individuals and businesses will succeed and which ones will fail. Just look at the banks, right? Banks will get bailouts. But the pizza shop on the corner, they're not going to get a bailout. The struggling hobby store isn't going to get a bailout. The auto parts store isn't going to get a bailout. But the ones that have access, they will get the bailouts. Whenever government favors particular businesses, it usually doesn't work out well. And there's always a motive behind it. People don't realize this, but there's always a motive behind it. There's conditions attached. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And this is where the boundaries between the government and corporations start to become murky. And all you have to do, again, look at 2007, 2008, the mortgage meltdown crisis. The government is going to use its power to compel corporations to carry out its will. When you look at the banking industry, did you notice that all these major banks, all these financial institutions used to be free market capitalists in every sense of the word? All of a sudden, they started getting enmeshed in the far left social issues. Do you really think that's a coincidence? Do you think it's a coincidence that corporations freely turn over your information to the government without the government ever having to show a warrant or anything? Essentially, you have these corporations now serving as the eyes and ears of the government. And this is something I talked about extensively on previous occasions because it was outlined in the National Strategy for Countering Domestic Terrorism, which was released in June of 2021. You look at the regulations. The government's imposed wide range of regulations on businesses and industries over the years. Ask yourself, when was the last major power plant that was built in the United States? I mean, China's building a new power plant every single week. Our country has expanded. We've gotten larger. Our population has grown. Our industries have grown. Yet, we don't build power plants anymore. The last major oil refinery here in the United States was, what, the late 70s? That was the last one we built? So as our country has grown and expanded, you want to know why our infrastructure has collapsed? Well, because of all the rules and regulations, because we can't expand the infrastructure as our country is growing. It's a complete disaster. And listen, some regulations, I get it. They're necessary. They exist to protect the public interest. But unfortunately, most of the regulations are completely useless. They limit free market competition. They limit innovation. And they do more harm than good. They create these unnecessary burdens on all types of businesses. They just drive up costs for us. It's a complete disaster. But it's not just about regulations either. You have the government that has the purse strings. And they use that money to influence corporations through direct subsidies, bailouts, rotation of ex-officials on corporate boards. I mean, just look at any major corporation. Look at their corporate board, and you will see former officials on their corporate board. This is particularly true when it comes to industries like the finance and defense industry, big tech, energy. I mean, you just look at James Baker, legal counsel for the FBI, leaves the FBI in disgrace and goes to work as the legal counsel for Twitter. And then all of a sudden we see these communications in the Twitter files between the FBI and Twitter about censoring posts. Gee, what a coincidence that is. It's, you got this symbiotic relationship. And it's the reason why a few dozen large corporations, they dominate the markets, expand into other sectors, limit competition. Just think about the last few years. And if you don't think the administrative state isn't the problem, just look at inflation. Look at the inflation that we are facing today. Look at the increased cost in just about everything, making our lives that much more difficult. You know, it's funny because when the COVID stimulus, people were getting the checks, most of them didn't realize that they were going to pay back that stimulus and some. Okay, and we paid far more in inflation costs than we've received in stimulus. This is because Congress can't think outside the box. Now, they say, oh, well, it wasn't the government stimulus that created the inflation. It was the supply chain shortages, and it's the war in Ukraine, and the tightening of supplies on the markets. No. When you print and spend trillions of dollars out of nowhere, it comes with consequences. You can't just make money. And when you increase the supply of the paper that we call money, that's going to increase the cost of everything. This was known beforehand. I warned about it. I did an episode on what a post-coronavirus world looked like. And I warned the economy is going to teeter with all this money going out. I warned that, you know, Congress, they, and the presidency, the executive branch, they lack the ability to think outside the box. They lack the ability to think creatively. They think that every single problem that exists, you just throw money at it and it's going to solve the problem. Well, how's that working out for us? Hasn't worked out too well. I mean, just look at the education system. A complete collapse of the education system. $1.4 trillion investment each and every year. Standards have been dropping each and every year. Basic proficiency levels are also dropping. Students cannot perform at the grade level they're in. So what's the cost versus benefit analysis on that? And listen, when you look at the inflation today, I'm not a captain of industry. I'm not a top-level economist. Okay, there's a lot of parts of the economy that are above my level. But Milton Friedman, he is someone that understood the economy. Where are the Milton Friedmans of today? And he said, the only driver behind inflation is the government. Nothing else. Take a listen to what Milton Friedman says.
Now, the first step toward understanding the cause of inflation is to recognize that it is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. It's always and everywhere a result of too much money, of a more rapid increase in the quantity of money than an output. Moreover, in the modern era, the important next step is to recognize that today governments control the quantity of money, so that as a result, inflation in the United States is made in Washington and nowhere else. Of course, no government any more than any one of us likes to take responsibility for bad things. We're all of us human. If something bad happens, it wasn't our fault. And the government is the same way, so it doesn't accept responsibility for inflation. If you listen to people in Washington talk, they will tell you that inflation is produced by greedy businessmen, or it's produced by grasping unions, or it's produced by spendthrift consumers. Or maybe it's those terrible Arab sheiks who are producing. Now, of course, businessmen are greedy. Who of us isn't? Trade unions are grasping. Who of us isn't? And there's no doubt that the consumer is a spendthrift. At least every man knows that about his wife. But none of them produce inflation for the very simple reason that neither the businessman, nor the trade union, nor the housewife has a printing press in their basement on which they can turn out those green pieces of paper we call money. Only Washington has that printing press, and therefore only Washington can produce inflation.
Sadly, the real captains of industry, they're gone today. Sadly, there's no Milton Friedmans anymore, the real ones that push and preach about free markets and limited government approaches, the Thomas Sowells. You know, we have some, but it's not enough. The Constitution established a federal government with limited powers, specifically enumerated in that document, and the founders believed that the best government was the one that governed the least. They were wary of this concentrated power. They were wary of an administrative state. They understood that an administrative state concentrates power in the hands of unelected bureaucrats who have significant control over the lives of the American people. And it is crystal clear that our lives have gotten worse under the administrative state, not better. And as it continues to expand its reach, our society has worsened as well. So I ask how I started. Why do we constantly look to the government to get involved in all aspects of life? Why? Why have we deviated from the founder's vision? And when we start to answer these questions, we can recognize our role in the system and that we as a people have an obligation. We can't look to government for every damn thing. We can't. Again, Eisenhower recognized this, and he said so in his farewell address. Take a listen.
Crises there will continue to be. In meeting them, whether foreign or domestic, great or small, there is a recurring temptation to feel that some spectacular and costly action could become the miraculous solution to all current difficulties. A huge increase in newer elements of our defenses, development of unrealistic programs to cure every ill in agriculture, a dramatic expansion in basic and applied research. These and many other possibilities, each possibly promising in itself, may be suggested as the only way to the road we wish to travel. But each proposal must be weighed in the light of a broader consideration, the need to maintain balance in and among national programs. Balance between the private and the public economy. Balance between the cost and hoped for advantages. Balance between the clearly necessary and the comfortably desirable. Balance between our essential requirements as a nation and the duties imposed by the nation upon the individual. Balance between actions of the moment and the national welfare of the future. Good judgment seeks balance and progress. Lack of it eventually finds imbalance and frustration. Another factor in maintaining balance involves the element of time. As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. We want democracy to survive for all generations to come, not to become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow.
And the solution isn't that hard. You know, Eisenhower, he recognized we need to downsize the government. We need to do it through a variety of means. The solution is there. We need to reduce the number of federal agencies that exist, eliminate unnecessary regulations, return power to the states, downsize the state governments as well. And if we do this, this would result in a more efficient and effective government that actually respects individual liberty, that promotes economic growth. So it's not that hard to correct the problem. The question is there a will to actually do that? Because this is not the vision the founding fathers had for the American government. It has grown far beyond the limited government established by the Constitution, and it's resulted in increased government intrusion into our lives, a loss of liberty. So let's get back to limited government. Let's take steps to reduce the administrative state's power. Let's return the power back to the people in the state. The principles of limited government, the promotion of individual liberty, autonomy, economic growth, the protection of property rights, preservation of individual rights and liberties, they form the bedrock of the American political system. They played a pivotal role in the success of this nation. And reaffirming our commitment to these fundamental values is crucial if we hope to reverse the current downward spiral that we find ourselves in, if we want to safeguard our nation's future prosperity. Because it's not over yet. We still have time. Now, if you found this episode informative, please share it with others on social media, family and friends. I appreciate all the 5-star ratings, written reviews on any podcast platform that allows it. I have the links up to the Wall Street Journal poll on the PAS Report website, PASReport.com. I want to thank you for joining me today, and I'll be back on Monday with another great episode of PAS Report Podcast.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Thank you for listening to the PAS Report Weekly Roundup Podcast.
Have a good one. Bye.
Be sure to rate, share, and subscribe to the podcast so you'll never miss an episode. Also, visit PASReport.com and follow us on Twitter at PAS Report.
Traffic jams. traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.